Yep, us crazy green divas are still here,
reinventing ourselves yet again.
Now we're streaming live on Facebook and YouTube.
You can find our videos and podcasts on all the usual places.
Still sharing low-stress ways
of living a deeper shade of green.
Hey everyone, welcome to the new Green Diva Show. I'm Green Diva Meg.
I'm Green Diva Lisa.
And I wonder how long we'll say the new. When will it just be the Green Diva Show?
Of which you can find on all the usual suspects of places to find your
podcasts and video.
YouTube.
Yeah, subscribe. Oh, we got to give Liv her opportunity to do a subscribe screen.
And you can
read all about it.
And ask your smart speakers to play us as well.
Oh, okay. I was going to do the whole thegreendivas.com thing.
That's T-H-E, greendivas.com.
She got it. So we have a really special show for you today. We got a chance to speak to one of our favorite CBS Sunday Morning correspondents. He's an author of like a whole library of cool books.
Mm-hmm.
David Pogue, who is an Emmy Award-winning broadcast journalist and correspondent. And of course, we know him best because
CBS Sunday Morning.
Yes. He's a science and technology writer and communicator. And like I said, he's got this whole library of cool books that he's done about manuals or for dummies on mostly technology, but also some arts.
And music and all kinds of things.
And he's been doing a lot of reporting on environment over the last few years, but he just wrote a really cool book, an important book, called How to Prepare for Climate Change.
A Practical Guide to Surviving the Chaos.
Well, Mr. Pogue, your book is detailed, well-researched, and well-written, and a little bit terrifying. But, you know, I really feel like I want to buy one of these books for everybody we know.
I feel the same way.
So I know.
I would greatly appreciate that.
Oh, I bet you would. Lunch is on hand.
Can I just say that we are huge fans of yours. We are CBS Sunday Morning freaks.
So much so.
So we were pretty excited when we learned about your book.
Great.
Every time I'm visiting with my grandkids on Sundays, that's the deal. I get the TV for CBS Sunday Morning, and they come and cuddle with me for a little while.
Right. They pretend to pay attention for like 5 minutes. They're like, okay, moving on.
Big
so, speaking of kids, I noticed the dedication page. I made an assumption that at least some of those people were your children.
Bingo. Yep. Galatia and Jeffrey are my children. Nikki is my wife. And, I wasn't going to have a dedication. Who needs, who among the readership cares about who the book is dedicated to? But the every galley that would come back, it kept saying, dedication yet to come. And I'm like, okay. So who else am I going to dedicate the book to but my kids and my wife?
Well, and you talk about in the dedication why, you know, that's part of why you wrote the book. But Mr. Pogue also has written many manuals, really clever and important manuals for various tech products.
And music.
And then, of course, your dummies, like Opera for Dummies. My husband needs that book. He's like, really?
You didn't hear it from us.
Like, he really wrote that? I'm like, yeah. So my question to you is, why would you write a book about climate change?
Yeah, it came as kind of a shock to a lot of Pogue followers. I mean, I've been doing a lot of environmental reporting for Sunday Morning for many years. I've done several reports on climate change and did one on fracking, did a couple on the plastics problem. And in my other career, I've been a how-to guy for decades and decades. As you say, I've been writing these, you know, how-to books for tech products and seven dummies books. And I started my own series in 1999 called the Missing Manual Series. And there's about 100 of those now. So the how-to explainer guy and the science guy have always been sort of moving along in parallel. And it all came together with this book. I'll leak to you an inside story that I haven't told anybody else except for the other interviewers. And that is that this book wasn't my idea. I pitched a different book to Simon and Schuster. And to my astonishment, and I actually went into, I live in Connecticut, I went into New York for this meeting with the editors, and they said, yeah, we like your idea, we want to do it, but we want to make it a two-part deal, two books, and we'd like you to do this one first. Ready? How to prepare for climate change. And I'm like, oh my gosh, that is such a great idea. I don't know if you know this, but the basic thing is based on this quote by John Holdren. He was a science advisor to Barack Obama. And in 2007, he gave a quote to the New York Times. He said, basically, there are three ways we can respond to climate change. There's mitigation, which is trying to stop it. There's adaptation, which is trying to adapt to it. And there's suffering. And the balance we do of the first two is going to affect how much we experience of the third one. So I feel like everything we read, like virtually everything we read or hear about our response to climate change is about mitigation. Stop flying, stop driving, eat less red meat, decarbonize society. And that is all great and it's super important and we're way late getting started and we need to do more of it. But you don't hear anything about the adaptation side, at least not for individuals. I mean, governments and corporations are adapting in a big way, building seawalls and developing drought-resistant seeds and moving farmland northward and stuff like that. They're all adapting, but what are we doing? What are we, every time there's a hurricane or a flood, it seems to catch America by surprise. It's like, dude, this is predictable. You could see this coming. You should have been ready. You should get ready now.
So it astonishes me how many companies are moving to Miami.
What the hell are you doing?
Even I know that. So I had dinner a few years ago, a dinner party, and there were a couple scientists at the table. And it was all doom and gloom about the future and what people knew and didn't know. And we ended up getting mired in... I shouldn't say mired because it was a great place to be, but it was about adaptation. But part of that had to do with developing deeper relations with the peoples that we love as part of an adaptation.
Yeah, and one of my experts said that one of the emergency preparedness steps you can take, one of the best steps you can take, is also to get to know the people who live near you, your neighbors. He talked about, he lived in California at the time and his neighborhood was decimated by fires. This is the 2018 fires and nobody had power and nobody had working freezers or refrigerators. So every night, all the people in his street would come out. Some of them would have power for a few hours a day. Some of them still had a working fridge. Some of them had no gas to cook with. Some did. So they would collaborate. They'd come out into the street every night and cook together and make dinner together and sort of ride out the disaster together. This guy even went as far, his name is Richard Heinberg. He's with a group called the Post Carbon Institute. And he said, you can go to a church, you can have dinner parties, you can organize a block party. You can just say hi as you drive by them every day. But the point is get to know your neighbors because they could be your safety net.
What about all the climate deniers? How do you talk about that with them?
Yeah, I should mention that this book, How to Prepare for Climate Change, covers things like how to insure and how to invest and how to talk to your children and how to overcome eco despair and where to move and what to grow. None of these things are my areas of expertise. I mean, I'm a tech and science guy. I didn't not start out as an expert in any of these things. So it's based on a year's worth of interviews with the top experts. It's more of a reporting and a writing job than it is, my career as a scientist or something. The therapists and psychologists I talked to about the denier question, one after another, after another, after another, said something that you probably heard, that you cannot change somebody's minds with facts of an opinion that they hold that wasn't based on facts to begin with. So a climate denier, and first of all, I think we should define what that is. I think it's a muddled term. There are two things that we might call a denier. One, is somebody who says there's nothing changing. The climate is not changing. And I think that's almost gone away. I mean, all you have to do is look out the window and read the paper. I think the number of people who say there's nothing going on are vanishingly small. The other category of denier is somebody who says, oh yeah, the climate is changing, but it's part of a natural cycle, that the climate always does that. And even that number is dropping faster and faster. The Yale Center of Climate Change Communications does a big survey every year on American attitudes toward climate change. As of 2020, the number is 32% of Americans now say that this is a natural event and not human-made. And you know who David Wallace Wells is? He wrote the book, The Uninhabitable Earth, best-selling climate change book. I interviewed him and I said, isn't it depressing that a third of Americans still think this is all a natural cycle? And he said, no, that's not depressing. That's fantastic. In this divided, polarized world, if you can get 50% of people to agree on anything, you're way ahead of the game. He said, let's face it, 25% of Americans believe that aliens walk among us. So I think if it's only 32%, you're
it's
doing
a step
well.
Up, right?
Right, exactly. Oh, so maybe I should answer the question. So how do you talk to deniers? The key line came from a guy I interviewed for the book, Thomas Doherty. He's a climate psychologist. He put it like this. People don't care what you know until they know that you care. So the point is, focus on the stories and the emotional effect of all this. Do not use facts, figures, statistics to change a climate denier's mind. Not only won't it work, it's been shown in studies that it will actually cause them to retrench their beliefs. You'll actually move them backward. Say, oh my gosh, my uncle's farm in Nebraska was flooded last year and he grew nothing. Say, my kid is so upset about the fact that his summer camp burned down in California. Talk about the stories, the effect on you. Do not use facts and figures. And find out what they feel. Listen to their arguments. I mean, they may be stupid, but listen to their arguments. People don't know.
don't tell them it's stupid.
And I can't roll my eyes.
Well, this is a good practice right now.
So moving on a little bit, because we only have you for a short time and we want to get as much in as we can. You talked a lot. You had a long section about where to live. And this book, by the way, is intensely practical. It really is filled with detailed, good information. You did a lot of homework. So my question to you is, and I just want people to know that he did a lot of research to help us make decisions if we're thinking about how we want to live and adapt to climate change. So you're in Connecticut now, I guess, I gather. We won't give your address or anything.
I am.
Where would you move and where would you want to be in 2030, let's say? And where would you want your kids, like if you had a choice and could envision where your kids would be in 2050?
It's a great question and a really realistic one, because I've got 2 years to go before my wife and I are empty nesters. So we're in Connecticut for the school system. So in 2 years, we can move anywhere and we're really thinking this through. So basically, the ideal climate haven city is far enough north that you avoid the hurricanes of the Gulf Coast and the brutal baking heat. You want to be far enough west that you're west of the East Coast, which is having a tremendous tick and mosquito problem, as well as devastating superstorms and hurricanes. We here in Connecticut got hit by Sandy a few years ago, Hurricane Sandy, and it was cold. We had no power. We had no heat. And we had no internet. Dad,
what are we going to do? Oh, my God.
We did, too.
Pretty devastating. You want to be far enough. You want to be far enough east that you avoid the wildfires of the West Coast. And the part that nobody ever talks about is the water shortages. Half of the United States, the western half, is in a state of on and off drought and has been for years. We get our water from aquifers, which are these big deposits of water under the ground. Those are drying out worldwide. the western half is water from snow melt, which is melting snow from the mountains that runs down into the rivers and the creeks and supplies our water. Well, as the winters get shorter and warmer, there's not much snow up there. So they're not getting water from the snow melt. In Nevada, there's the Hoover Dam, which has created this 110-mile-long lake called Lake Mead. And 25 million residents of Las Vegas and California get their water from that. That's down to one-third its regular level. So water shortages are going to be a big deal. We think water is this free commodity. We don't think about it much, but the price of water has gone up 50% in the last few years. So you want to find somewhere that's away from those extremes and has unlimited clean, fresh water. And there's one area of the country that has all of that, and that is the Great Lakes area. This is Wisconsin, Ohio, Illinois, Western New York, Pennsylvania. And there are a lot. What's interesting is there's more to choosing a climate city than just the climate. If you have the opportunity to move, and 40 million Americans do move every year, you also have to consider the cost of living. What's the culture like? What's the demographics like? Will I get a job? What are their recreational opportunities? Do they have a sports team? Things like that. And so, yeah, so in the book, I identified 14 of the dream climate cities. The winner in my book is, if you can believe it, Madison, Wisconsin, which is built on five
did
lakes.
They, it's did a nice. They give you a gold key to the city.
There might have been a small payment involved. No, no. But it is a truly beautiful city. The population is well educated. It's a state capital. It's a university town. I'm not sure when this podcast will be released, but this Sunday, January 24th, CBS Sunday Morning is going to air my story about the quest for the perfect climate haven city. And I don't want to spoil anything, but it concludes with my interview of mayor of Madison, who showed me around the town. But I mean, you know, Cleveland, Syracuse, Buffalo, Duluth, all of these old Rust Belt cities where the cost of living is low, they're all on the lake. They all have plenty of room to expand as they become renewed climate haven cities. They're licking their chops, some of those old Rust Belt towns. They're like, our time is here.
So clearly we need to kind of think about sort of autonomy and survivalist kind of stuff. That's part of what you're talking about in this book in a more gentle way, I suppose. One of the chapters that I really resonated with was the one about protecting your children and talking to your children. And you really handled it beautifully in the book, and I want to recommend it. And it came at a time when our friend Harriet Sugarman, who's also known as Climate Mama, just released a book called, and I'm looking over here because that's where it is, How to Talk to Your Kids About Climate Change. There we go.
Wow. I should have interviewed her for the book.
I looked to see if she was in your quotes there, but she's a really cool lady and we love her. But at any rate, I was really thrilled that you covered that because my children are older, but I have grandchildren now. You know, we do need to worry about how we talk about these things and educate them.
Yeah, I didn't talk to Harriet, but I did speak to some other child psychologists. And I have to say, I was really surprised by what they said. You know, as parents, or at least for me, my instinct is to want to protect my children, not upset them, make them think that the world is going to be okay, make them feel secure. But the word on climate change is they will smell that you're not telling the whole truth right away, that already climate change. And so in the book, these experts gave me suggestions for how to talk to each age group. You know, for example, if they're very young, they suggest that you do it maybe out in nature on a walk. So you can say, well, this is how, you know, the rain evaporates from the sea and then it comes down into the oceans again. And, you know, you explain things in a gentle, simple way and you stress that things are changing, but then you say, but the world's smartest people are working on it and I will always be here with you. You know, you do realistic reinsurance, but you never lie to them and you never mislead the severity of it because they will smell it on you.
So true.
So true. I love that anything can happen, ready for anything chapter. And I just wanted to hear about some of the other specific things people are doing that you...
So there are chapters on how to prepare for flood, for wildfire, for heat waves, for drought, for mosquito and tick infestations. But it all begins with a general chapter, as you say. It's called Ready for Anything. And it's steps you can take now to protect yourself against any kind of disaster. 25 million Americans a year are enduring the effects of extreme weather, which is a historic high number. But there are all kinds of other things that happen. You know, factories explode and power plants leak and so on. So in general, it's becoming a riskier world. And there are steps that you can prepare for any of these disasters. So for example, this is nothing new, but you should have a go bag. This is like a backpack or a rolling bag that you keep in the front closet that has everything you'd need if you have to leave the house in a hurry and be gone for a day or two. So some snacks that keep, a first aid kit, copies of your ID, some cash, flashlights, stuff like that that you can... So think of all the footage that we've seen of people leaving town during the wildfires, during the hurricanes. It's long snaking lines of stopped traffic on these limited roads. If you're at the front of that line because you got out of your house sooner, you'll be much happier. So think ahead, make a go bag for each member of the family and one for your pets. It's got to have your medications in it or the pet's medication. If you have a baby, you got to think ahead about what the baby's going to need. And that way you can just grab the thing and leave. You know, my son had a Boy Scout emergency preparedness merit badge, and he had to create a go bag, also known as a bug out bag, for that merit badge. And it turned out it was fun. It was like a scavenger hunt. And we walked around and he had suggestions. He said, "What about toilet paper?" And I'll never forget this. The kid was 13. And he goes, "Dad, when the chips are down, toilet paper might become the new currency." This is years.
So we see.
Before COVID, he was absolutely right. So you want to go back. And also the common denominator of most of these disasters are interruptions in power and interruptions in clean water. So for power, there are various ways to generate your own power. I mean, one of the challenges of this book is I didn't want it to be some white elitist screed on how rich people can get ahead in times of climate change. So for $15, you can get a tiny hand crank generator that's enough to charge your phone. And it has a flashlight and
I have one emergency radio. I gave one to my husband.
Oh, yeah? Yeah, exactly. Or if you've got $250, you can get a more traditional generator, a gasoline-powered one. You keep it outside. You run a long extension cord to your refrigerator and freezer so you don't lose your food, maybe some lights. You can get one of those from Home Depot. And in times of trouble, that can keep your food alive. And then fresh water is another one. The old saw is, you know, fill your bathtubs before a storm or a fire. And that's fine if you're okay drinking out of your bathtub. But there are...
My bathtub's are clean. Wait a minute.
I drink out of yours. There are actually some cleaner, ready-to-go sources of water in your house. There's your hot water heater. There's 40 that. Or 80 gallons.
That was right an there. Interesting surprise. That was one of the things I read and went, oh... Never thought of that one.
Yeah, that's right. You turn off the intake at the top so it doesn't get contaminated with the city water. And then you open the outlet at the bottom and out it pours, let it cool off, and you can drink that. There's water in the pipes of your house if you have like a two-story house. And there's water in your toilets. I don't mean the bowl.
Woof.
The tank is clean, fresh water. There's 3 or 4 gallons in every toilet. So you actually have water in your house already.
Good to know. We do need the generator for the pumping of the well. I mean, we're lucky enough to have a well.
Yeah, my husband's working on the generator thing. He's actually in the business, the electrical generation business. And we're like the cobbler.
Oh, really?
Without any shoes, you know, the cobbler's kids. But he's working on it.
That's how it goes.
You might be able to get a good deal.
Yeah, exactly. There's so much great information in this book, and we could really talk all day. I literally need my hands.
Let's
do it.
Don't tempt us.
I know. You're so cool.
Careful what you ask.
No, we're like fangirls.
We are.
Mr. Pogue fangirls.
Well, then that makes me a fanboy of yours.
Well, really, it has been charming and fun to talk to you. And this is important stuff. And I like that you're focused on adaptation. It's a little bit like, gulp, are we not making it through mitigation? But we got to do it all, right? But at the end of the book, after all the terrifying stuff, right? Like the biblical, you know, fires, brimstone, all that. You come in with hope and you talk about hope. And that, I think, is what we need more than anything.
Right. Would you share a little hope with our audience?
Yeah. I mean, keep in mind that this book was written during the Trump administration. The man
light
who
at the end
the
of the tunnel?
Climate change. Yeah, exactly. The man who scrubbed climate change from all the websites of the federal government. So it was a super depressing time. But the amazing thing is that much of the country charged right ahead without the federal government. They're like, you're not going to lead? Okay, we'll lead. 25 states signed an agreement called We Are Still In, which means we are going to abide by the Paris Agreement, even if the country isn't. Incredible and thrilling. And 438 city mayors, called the climate mayors, they all agreed. And one corporation after another, I mean, we think of corporate as the big polluters, but because of pressure from the public, pressure from investors, and pressure from their own employees, nowadays, every major company is making the most incredible strides in doing better with their emissions. I mean, Microsoft vows by 2050, they will not only be carbon neutral, they intend to remove all the carbon they've ever released into the air since their founding in 1979.
I mean, well, that's impressive.
Incredible strides. General Motors announcing a couple weeks ago that they're going to be an all-electric car company. Like, what is happening? So, yeah, there are some gigantic signs for hope. And, of course, we elected a climate president just now, and that may be the biggest sign of all, that things are going to change.
Well, we want to...
So can you tell us, I know your book is out, with this podcast and video may come out a few days before your book is available, but can you tell us when it's coming out and how people can find it?
That's my favorite question. Yes, it comes out on January 26th, and you can pre-order it online on Amazon or at your local bookstore. And I'm sure you have done so.
Oh, thank you
so much. My college fund thanks you for that. But I'm sure all your authors tell you this, but it helps a lot if you pre-order the book, pre-order a book, because the bestseller lists for that week are, they incorporate all the pre-ordered books. So it really helps out us struggling authors. And finally, I'm sure you guys appreciate this, but I'll just throw it out. The idea of preparing for extreme weather and climate change, on the surface of it, you might think, oh, that's because I will come out ahead with my health and my finances better if I'm properly insured, properly prepared. And that's true. That's the obvious reason. The less obvious reason to prepare is that there is a huge mental health component. You will feel better knowing that you're prepared. You'll sleep better at night. You'll have less anxiety about the future. It's a well-studied psychological phenomenon that taking action is the antidote to depression. It makes you feel as though you have some control over your bad situation. And in this case, you do. So I will put in that plug for personal preparation. It's not just because you and your family will survive the extremes better. It's also all of you will feel more secure in your future.
Wow. Yep.
Perfect.
Climate depression is real. Ecotherapy. We've done lots of shows on that. I'm so glad you covered that in the book.
I know, and well covered too.
Yeah, it is. But what we do want to say, David, is thank you so much for making time for us and getting us motivated to be prepared.
We'll look forward to seeing you on CBS Sunday morning and getting your book in our hot little hands.
Well, thank you. You are so kind, divas. Thank you. Appreciate this and appreciate your time. You obviously prepared and like really looked at the book, and that means a lot. They don't always.
Oh, no kidding.
We try. And now it's time for Companies We Dig with Green Diva Lisa. And it is sponsored by Your Arbor, which is a browser extension that helps you stay in alignment with your values when you shop online. Go to yourarbor.com and learn all about it. It's easy and it's awesome.
It is. So the company that I picked this time.
What company did you dig?
The company I dig is 4Ocean, 4Ocean.com. And it's a company that was recommended by our friends at Your Arbor. It is a company that recovers plastic from oceans, which we've talked a lot about as being so important. And they turn the plastic into these really cool bracelets. And now they have a new insert for face masks that help keep stuff off of your, you know, face.
Right. And if you're some of the healthcare workers, have you seen their faces are all raw and blistered?
Anybody that has to wear a mask all day, you know, really. Anyway, these bracelets are beautiful. There's a couple different kinds. There's ones that are just braided. There's ones that have braiding, but clear beads on top. And they come in different colors. And the different colors represent different animals, that sea creatures that they're protecting. So for every purchase, they will recover 1 pound of plastic. And the colors are things like the blue-green is for stingrays. Blue is for a harp seal. Yellow is for a sea turtle. Pink is for a flamingo, pink flamingo. White is for polar bears.
Aww.
Black and white is for orca whales. I mean, it's really, and they're a fun collection, and it's a way to talk about to people who notice your beautiful little bracelets about why you're wearing that
bracelet.
Get some
plastic cleaned up. Look adorable. Maybe a great gift. Just saying.
I've already bought
some. My birthday's coming up.
They have already recovered 12,455,340 pounds of plastic debris from the ocean since 2017.
Oh, my goodness. I'm almost trying to calculate how many tons that is.
I can't do that. Can't get that from here.
It's a lot.
But anyway, so that's my our companies we dig
All
for
right.
this segment.
Well, I dig it. Thank you, sis. Good homework.
You're welcome.
Well, that wraps up this awesome show. We had a really fun time. Thank you, Mr. Pogue.
Thank you, David.
And anyway, I hope all the rest of you have a wonderful, safe, green week.
So, what'd you think? Let us know. And in the meantime, follow our YouTube channel. Follow the Green Divas on Instagram, Facebook, all the usual social media hangouts. And now you can ask your smart speaker to play the Green Divas podcast.
And I have a favor. Please share this with your friends. Thanks in advance.